Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. Shop our huge selection of concrete. From general purpose concrete to specialty sand and mortar mixes, we have what you need to get any job done right. View our entire selection online or in store today and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
This is the True Philippine Ghost Stories podcast, a show dedicated to exploring some of the most unsettling accounts of the supernatural ever recorded from the Philippine Islands. We delve into personal narratives, local legends, and historical threads that connect the seen and unseen, bridging folk tradition with the eerie silence of the afterlife. In each episode, we bring you a story that dares to stand on the threshold between our reality and the ghostly beyond, where truth and terror often walk hand in hand. This episode is designed to serve as a respectful companion piece to the book True Philippine Ghost Stories, Book 1, and the narrative titled My Curse, As Told to Jerry Barinuevo, from pages 55 to 59 of that volume. We have taken great care to honour the original work's spirit. We present this discussion and analysis not as a replacement, but as an homage to the source material, and we do not intend to infringe upon any copyrights. Instead, we aim to deepen your understanding, enrich the storytelling experience, and breathe life into the cultural and personal significance behind this harrowing tale.
This is Mark, and you're listening to True Philippine Ghost Stories Podcast. Tonight's story is My Curse. Afterward, we will briefly mention the next episode's topic, The Village Spectre by Gianna G. Maniego. But first, we immerse ourselves entirely in a haunting narrative, one that begins in childhood, persists through adulthood, and ultimately challenges our understanding of life and death. If you're ready to confront a world where departed souls whisper through the silence and where one family's legacy of unusual gifts and burdens still lingers long after the funeral wreaths have withered, then let's begin. Is it a gift or a curse to see what others cannot? To lift the thin veil that separates the living from the dead and peer into those dim spaces where spirits roam? For many, the promise of extrasensory perception, or clairvoyance, sounds alluring, like a secret window into mysteries unknown. Imagine, just for a moment, the burden it might place upon a child's shoulders. Imagine waking in the dark hours of the night and knowing that you are never truly alone, that unseen presences linger just beyond your bedroom door. Imagine pointing, trembling at a corner that no one else finds frightening, and wondering why only you are singled out for this terrifying gift. Tonight's story comes to us from the Philippines, a nation whose tapestry of culture, faith, and folklore is richly embroidered with the supernatural. Ghost stories are not mere entertainment here. They are inheritances passed through families and communities. Among these traditions stands the figure of the Albubayo, the faith healer, who bridges the human world and the spiritual realm. And in My Curse, we encounter a descendant of such a healer, a grandchild who inherited not just the family's bloodline, but its peculiar ability to see and speak with the dead. My Curse is the account of a young individual burdened with second sight from an early age, a child who would run screaming to their mother, pointing at corners where invisible shapes stood. Their story follows a trajectory through grief, familial bonds, near-death experiences, and the persistent presence of entities beyond our mortal realm. As we explore these events, we'll also dip into the cultural currents that inform them, the Filipino concept of the third eye, the role of ancestral spirits, the reverence for elders, and the uneasy truce many people hold with the supernatural. The story is simple enough on its surface, a child gifted or cursed with the ability to see the dead, a grandmother, a powerful faith healer whose influence does not wane with death, a night of revelry leading to a brush with mortality, out-of-body experiences, and spirit guides who test the boundaries between fate and free will. But look deeper, and it asks profound questions about destiny, morality, and the meaning of family ties that do not end with the grave. We begin where all good ghost stories start, in the dim memory of childhood, where the world is large, strange, and humming with mysteries. Our protagonist, let's call them the Seer, was no older than 4 years old when the first incidents occurred. At that tender age, most of us barely distinguish between dreams and waking life. Monsters live under our beds, shadows flicker and stretch across the walls, and an adult's reassurance can soothe most terrors. But in the Seer's case, these visions were not easily banished. They manifested as figures that no one else could see, voices no one else could hear, and peculiar sensations in spaces that should have felt safe. This young child would often run to their mother, pointing and stammering about someone, something, in a corner of the room. The mother, perplexed, would see nothing, just furniture, maybe a hanging curtain shifting in the breeze. Yet the child insisted, eyes wide with terror. In Filipino culture, parents often take a child's fear seriously, sometimes even seeking spiritual remedies. Even if they do not see what the child sees, they might suspect that the invisible world is making its presence known. As the Seer grew older, the realization dawned. This was not normal. Other children didn't complain of shadowy strangers in their bedrooms, the whispers under their bed, or the presence lurking in the hallway at midnight. These were unique burdens. And as consciousness expanded with age, so too did the frightening understanding that something was either very wrong or very special about their vision. Filipino folklore includes the concept of the third eye, a spiritual insight that remains closed in most people, but opens in a select few. Some are born with it, others develop it after traumatic events, and still others may have it passed down through bloodlines. The Seer would eventually learn that they were not the first in the family to harbor such abilities. It is often said that special gifts run in families. The Seer's grandmother was a faith healer of considerable repute. In Philippine villages and small towns, the Albul Yario occupies the space between doctor and priest, performing traditional healing rituals that blend Catholic faith, indigenous beliefs, and folk medicine. They cure ailments, cast out evil spirits, and restore balance to those troubled by unseen forces. The grandmother's practice was known for its power. Relatives speak of her extracting bugs and strange objects from the mouths of patients as she coaxed illnesses out of their bodies. An unsettling image for a young mind. She kept a ball, a wooden trunk filled with potions, herbs, and amulets. Among these items was a hanky adorned with a pentagram, a symbol often misunderstood, but here serving as a protective seal or a focus for healing energies. The grandmother's world was tactile and mysterious. equal parts herbal remedy and whispered prayer, animalistic exorcism, and Catholic invocation. The seer spent hours by the grandmother's side. Even as a child, they felt a kindred spirit in her, an understanding that passed silently between them. Perhaps the grandmother recognized the gift within her grandchild. Perhaps the child knew, on some intuitive level, that this old woman with wise eyes and steady hands held the key to their strange visions. Then came the grandmother's illness and eventual passing. The hospital room was a stark contrast to her earthy healing chamber. Where once she used potions and prayers, now doctors fought with machines and chemical medicines. The seer watched, heartbroken, as their grandmother's life slipped away. The moment of death is always surreal, but here it was doubly so. The one person who might have understood them best was gone. Death, however, does not always sever ties so cleanly, especially not where someone so spiritually attuned is concerned. Shortly after the grandmother's passing, the family gathered to arrange the funeral. Tensions rose over details that might seem trivial: where to bury her, what coffin to choose, and what dress she should wear to the afterlife. Grief often manifests in bickering over such minutiae, as if we can control death by controlling its formalities. As the relatives argued, the seer stood quietly nearby, still reeling from loss. It was then that they heard it, a whisper, quiet and unmistakable, drifting into their ear like a breeze through a cracked window. It was the grandmother's voice, clear and commanding despite its ghostly source. She had a preference, you see, for what she would wear in the coffin. A green polka dot dress with butterfly sleeves, reminiscent of those once worn by a former first lady, known for her fashion. The seer, hair standing on end, delivered the message. "Lola wants the green polka dot dress," they said. The family froze. How did the child know about that particular dress? Their mother's astonishment confirmed that the seer had no ordinary knowledge. The grandmother's whisper from beyond the veil did not merely break a silence, it validated the seer's strange abilities to the entire family. From that moment, the plan for the dress was no longer in dispute. This event stands as a quiet but profound testament to the bond that persists between grandmother and grandchild. In Filipino culture, it's common to believe that the departed hover near their families during the wake, ensuring their wishes are respected. By honoring the grandmother's request, the family acknowledged both her lingering spirit and the seer's extraordinary role as messenger. What does it mean to be gifted in this way? Clairvoyance, mediumship, the opening of the third eye? These are labels that attempt to classify abilities that defy simple explanation. In the Philippines, as in many parts of the world, individuals with such talents inspire a mixture of fear, reverence, and curiosity. They are consulted in times of crisis, but also viewed warily. After all, if someone can see ghosts, what else might they perceive? For the seer, this ability was a constant source of unease, even as it provided moments of guidance, like hearing a grandmother's last request. It also isolated them from those who could not understand. To see the dead is not just to observe, it is to interact with a realm that others deny. It can color one's entire life, influence choices, and instill a persistent sense that life's stage is crowded with actors no one else can see. When family members recognized the truth of this whisper, they could no longer dismiss the seer's visions as childish fears or drunken hallucinations. A new understanding had dawned, one that would follow the seer through adolescence and into early adulthood, culminating in a far more dangerous encounter, one that ventured beyond mere ghostly sightings into the very domain of death itself. As the seer reached young adulthood, life took the familiar turns of youthful rebellion. There were parties to attend, friends to impress, and new experiences to try. In many cultures, these rites of passage carry their own risks and temptations. Alcohol and marijuana, common enough indulgences among the restless youth, blurred the boundaries of perception. For someone who can already see beyond the normal senses, what does intoxication do? It was during one such night, fueled by substance and excitement, that the seer experienced something more harrowing than ever before. Surrounded by friends, laughter, and the haze of smoke and drink, the seer felt a sudden dread. A pronouncement slipped from their lips. Someone will die tonight. We must consider how unsettling this would be. Parties are meant for celebration, not predictions of doom. Did the seer's voice tremble as they spoke those words? Did the friends exchange word glances, laughter faltering? They might have brushed it off as a drunken outburst, until the seer's body collapsed, lifeless and silent. At that moment, the atmosphere in the cramped car or house, or wherever they happened to be, transformed from carefree partying to sudden panic. The seer had crossed a threshold. One might argue that it was inevitable. Living so close to the world of spirits, perhaps they had invited this flirtation with death. In many cultures, near-death experiences are stories told in hushed tones. Life-altering events that rearrange a person's priorities and beliefs. The seer's experience was nothing short of extraordinary. As their physical body lay prostrate, friends crying and shouting for help, the seer found themselves floating above the scene. They looked down, detached yet fully conscious, and saw the pitiable sight of their own body lying there, motionless. Fear often grips people at the threshold of death, yet many near-death experiences describe a strange calm or curiosity. The seer marveled, "Is that me?" From this vantage point, they observed everything. The friend's panic, the desperate race to the hospital that would follow. Then came the entities, two faceless beings who materialized on either side. Faceless, they lacked distinguishing features, just vague humanoid shapes cloaked in darkness or mist. Their presence was not comforting. They issued a simple, chilling invitation. "Come with us." The seer hesitated. Something inside warned that accepting this invitation would be final, irreversible. Then, out of the haze, another figure appeared. It was the seer's uncle, who had long since passed away. Instead of beckoning the seer forward, he gestured frantically for them not to follow the faceless beings. The uncle's desperate signals introduced a tension. Two different calls from beyond. One urging onward into the unknown, another pleading to resist. The seer refused to go with the faceless entities. In many cultural narratives, these beings represent death's emissaries. Soul collectors, psychopomps, or malicious spirits. When the seer declined, they demanded justification. Why should the seer be spared the final journey? The seer tried rationales that felt obvious. "I want to stay with my family." The beings remained unmoved. "I am too young." Again, no reaction. Finally, the seer said, "I have not finished what I have to do. I have unfinished business." This reason seemed to resonate, as though these beings recognized that human lives have arcs, missions, and purposes. The notion of unfinished business is common in ghost lore. Spirits linger on Earth when tasks remain incomplete. But here, the reverse argument saved the seer's life. If they had unfinished tasks, perhaps their story was not ready to close. In an instant, as if pulled by an invisible thread, the seer's consciousness snapped back into their body. Awakening felt like re-entering a cramped and painful space. Chest pains flared, and the senses returned in a rush of noise and panic. The friends were driving to a hospital. The faceless beings hovered but began to fade, outmatched by the earthly forces of doctors and emergency medicine. In the hospital's fluorescent glare, the seer stabilized. Doctors and nurses bustled, trying to explain what had happened. One doctor insisted it was no heart attack, just drug-induced unconsciousness. But the seer knew better. They had seen too much, watched their own resuscitation from above, communicated silently with these eerie entities, recognized their deceased uncle in that borderland between life and death. The next morning, the seer recounted every detail to astonished friends. How could they know who cried, who panicked, who said what, while supposedly unconscious? This knowledge was impossible by any normal means. It confirmed to their peers that some invisible faculty guided the seer's awareness. For the seer, this event reinforced a truth they had always felt. The dead, the spirits, and the other side were never far away. The lines between these worlds were permeable. Returning to life after dancing so close to death changed the seer's perspective forever. What are we to make of this tale? In Western contexts, near-death experiences have been studied for decades. Some argue they are purely neurological phenomena, hallucinations caused by oxygen deprivation. Others suggest they are glimpses of a spiritual afterlife, where beings of light or dark might beckon us onward. In the Filipino context, stories like this often blend seamlessly with existing beliefs about ancestors, spirits, and the importance of unfinished life tasks. The grandmother's posthumous instruction about the green polka dot dress mirrors the communal belief in ancestor veneration and the idea that the dead maintain ties to the living. The uncle's intervention in the near-death scenario suggests that family does not cease to care or guide even after death. Many Filipino families keep altars adorned with photos of the departed, leading that these spirits linger as guardians. The seer's special sight may have been inherited from the grandmother, a form of spiritual lineage. This raises questions. Are such abilities genetic? Spiritual gifts passed along through certain family lines? In the Philippines, people believe that antine, orations, can also run in families, along with healing talents or sensitivity to the supernatural. The duality of the seer's life, torn between a curse and a gift, is universal. What one person deems a curse might be another's path to higher understanding. The seer's anguish was real, seeing what others cannot, carrying the weight of supernatural knowledge, losing their grandmother and hearing her voice beyond the grave, and wrestling with spiritual forces that nearly claimed their life. Trip away the paranormal elements, and my curse is at heart about human connection and the fear of isolation. The seer craved understanding from their family, comfort from their grandmother, and reassurance that they were not alone in their abilities. Death often fractures families, but here it also provided proof of a bond that transcended mortality. To witness your grandmother's death and then speak to her spirit, this conflates love and loss in startling ways. The grandmother's whisper created a final moment of closeness, a testament that love does not simply vanish. For the seer, who later hovered between life and death themselves, this knowledge must have felt like a kind of armor against fear. The party scene also speaks to reckless youth and the fragility of life. Countless young adults think themselves immortal until a brush with death reveals how thin the line is. For the seer, that revelation came with supernatural confirmation. Time is finite, and life's purpose matters. When the faceless beings demanded a reason to spare the seer, the invocation of a clever excuse, it was a commitment to living more intentionally. My curse stands among numerous tales of clairvoyance and mediums found in Filipino literature and oral traditions. Many stories in the True Philippine Ghost Story series deal with spirits, hauntings, and inexplicable visions. Few, however, delve so deeply into the personal toll of possessing such a gift. Instead of focusing on an external ghost haunting a house, we witness a haunting from within, a relentless awareness that ghosts walk beside us, not as intruders, but as persistent neighbors in an unseen community. From a storytelling perspective, the narrative's strength lies in its candor. The seer does not dramatize their gift for applause. They present it as fact, and often a burdensome fact at that. Similarly, the near-death experience does not morph into a grand moral sermon. It simply is a strange negotiation at the threshold of mortality, a reminder that life's edges are more porous than we'd like to think. In the greater context of Philippine spirituality, the seer's experiences align with the synthesis of indigenous animism, Catholic piety, and folk superstition. Here, the dead linger, ancestors guide, and sensitive individuals bridge worlds. Whether one believes literally in these phenomena or views them as metaphors, the cultural resonance is undeniable. We must spare a moment to consider the two faceless beings. Who or what were they? In many ghostly traditions, entities that appear faceless represent incomplete forms, souls not yet ready or not permitted to show their true visage. They might be psychopomps, spirits tasked with ferrying the dead. Or they might be darker, more malevolent forces, eager to claim an errant soul. Their insistence on a reason before letting the seer go is noteworthy. It implies rules, a cosmic bureaucracy guiding who passes on and who returns. In the Catholic-infused spirituality of the Philippines, the afterlife is structured. Souls go to heaven, hell, or purgatory. But folk traditions layer countless other spirits and intermediaries onto this structure. The faceless beings might be creatures from a pre-colonial cosmology, where spirits governed rivers, mountains, and crossroads of life and death. Or they might be symbolic representations of fate and destiny themselves. Without faces, these beings become a canvas on which we project our fears and hopes that they yielded to the explanation of unfinished business suggests a moral structure in the universe. Life should not end prematurely if there is meaning yet to be fulfilled. After surviving this ordeal, how does one live differently? The seer never states it plainly, but we can infer that they emerged, changed. Understanding that death hovers close, that ancestors watch, and that some part of you can roam free outside your body would make everyday concerns seem trivial. Perhaps the seer became more compassionate, more purposeful. Maybe they took up some of their grandmother's healing practices, or sought ways to help others, fulfilling that unfinished business. Or perhaps they remained cautious and private, unwilling to share their gift widely for fear of ridicule. We do not know the full aftermath. The story ends without grand revelations of life changes, but the absence of that detail invites us to wonder. In ghost stories, the after is often left implicit. The experience alone is enough to unsettle the listener, prompting self-reflection. Ghost stories are often less about ghosts and more about ourselves, our doubts, fears, and hopes. My curse can be viewed as a parable of faith and doubt. The seer doubts their normalcy, their place in society, while others doubt the existence of what the seer sees. The grandmother's whisper and the out-of-body experience both confirm and complicate the seer's reality. Consider how the presence of the uncle, a trusted family figure, tips the scales. Without the uncle's intervention, the seer might have gone with the faceless beings. Family loyalty transcends death, an affirmation that love and guidance do not end at the grave's edge. In a deeply Catholic and family-centered culture like the Philippines, this resonates powerfully. The living rely on the dead for blessings and guidance. The dead rely on the living for prayers and remembrance. In this light, the story underscores the redemptive quality of acknowledging one's spiritual heritage. The grandmother's legacy, the family's acceptance of the seer's talents, and the uncle's protective gesture all suggest that love and kinship are stronger than fear, stronger even than death itself. We live in a world increasingly dominated by science and skepticism, yet stories like My Curse endure. They matter because they remind us that human experience is vast and not fully explained by material evidence. Whether you believe in ghosts or not, tales of the supernatural challenge our assumptions and invite humility before the unknown. For Filipino audiences, and indeed for any who hail from cultures rich in supernatural lore, this story reaffirms a worldview that allows for mystery, spiritual presence, and moral complexity beyond the rigid boundaries of empirical proof. It tells us that our ancestors may still whisper in our ears, that the dead might still have preferences about their funeral attire, and that in moments of grave danger, unseen family may intercede on our behalf. For those who find comfort in logic alone, My Curse still offers value. It reveals psychological truths about grief, trauma, and the human capacity to craft meaning from inexplicable events. The seer's experiences, even if we've reduced them to hallucinations, speak to the power of the mind and the depth of the human yearning for connection, purpose, and understanding. As we close the chapter on My Curse, let's recall the questions we started with. Is this ability a gift or a curse? The story never provides a definitive answer because it likely depends on perspective. What is certain is that the seer's life, like the grandmothers before them, is textured by encounters with what lies beyond a normal perception. Such a life may be harder, filled with terrifying visions and responsibilities few would want. Yet it also carries a rare intimacy with the truth that life does not vanish at death's door, that something, someone, remains, capable of whispering from the other side. In the end, My Curse leaves us with a renewed appreciation for stories that dwell in the liminal spaces. Those half-lit corridors between life and death, skepticism and faith, mundane and mystical. These stories pass through books and retellings, serve as quiet ambassadors from a richer, more mysterious understanding of existence. We have ventured deep into this personal narrative, dissecting its emotional core and cultural significance. Let's pause now, take a breath, and step back into the living world. But keep a fragment of this tale with you. After all, who can say when a whisper from beyond might brush your ear, or when you might find yourself hovering just beyond the threshold? On our next episode, we will journey from the personal into the communal with The Village Spectre by Gianna G. Manigo. What happens when an entire village bears witness to a persistent apparition, an uninvited guest who walks their streets and watches their doings? Is it a curse upon the community, or a warning sign they have yet to understand? Join us next time as we unravel the mystery of the village specter and consider how whole communities grapple with the supernatural, shaping legends and collective memories that echo through generations. Thank you for listening to this episode of the True Philippine Ghost Stories podcast. If you found this exploration meaningful, consider following or subscribing on your chosen platform. Feel free to share your thoughts, experiences, or similar stories with our community, because part of what makes these accounts so powerful is the discussion they inspire. Remember, the line between our world and others is often thinner than we think. Until we meet again, stay curious, stay cautious, and keep listening to the whispers that drift in the quiet hours before dawn.